हे वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the 8th canto, chapter 1, text number 6 and 7. Let's see which one's on the board. Okay, so I'll read 6. Kritam pura bhagavata kapilasyanu varnitam akyashe bhagavan yagno yachchakara kurudvaha. O best of the crews, I have already described in the 3rd canto the activities of Kapila, the son of Devahuti. Now I shall describe the activities of Yajnapati, the son of Akuti. Text number 7. Virakta Kama Bogeshu Satarupa Pati Prabhu Vishrija Rajyam Tapase Sabharo Vanam Avisat Virakta Kama Bogeshu Satarupa Pati Prabhu Vishrija Rajyam Tapase Sabaryo Vanam Avishat Virakta Kama Bogeshu Satarupa Pati Prabhu Vishrija Rajyam Tapase Sabaryo Vanam Avishat Virakta kama bogeshu Satarupa pati prabhu Vishrija rajam tapase Sabaryo vanam avishat Virakta kama bogeshu Kama Bogeshu Satarupa Pati Vashu Rama Tatapase Rama Vasyat Virakta Kama Bogeshu Satarupa Pati Prabhu Vishrijara jam tapase Sabarova nama vishat Vaishnavis Virakta kama bogeshu Satarupa pati prabhu Vishrijara jam tapase Sabarova nama vishat Rakta kama bhogeshu Satarupa pati prabhu Vishvijara jantapase Sabaryo vanamavishat Virakta, without attachment, kama bhogeshu, in sense gratification, in grihastha life. Satarupa pati, the husband of Satarupa, namely Swayambhuva Manu. Prabhu, who was the master or king of the world. Visrija, after renouncing totally Rajyam, his kingdom. Tapase, for practicing austerities. Sabaryaha, with his wife. Vanam, the forest. Avishat, entered. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Swayambhuva Manu, the husband of Satarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. Please repeat. Swayambhuva Manu, the husband of Satarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.2, evam parampara praptam imam rijarsho vidu. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. All the Manus were perfect kings. They were Rajarshis. In other words, although they held posts as kings of the world, they were as good as great saints. Swayambhuva Manu, for example, was the emperor of the world. Yet, he had no desire for sense gratification. This is the meaning of monarchy. The king of the country or the emperor of the empire must be so trained that by nature he renounces sense gratification. It's not that because one becomes a king, he should unnecessarily spend money for sense gratification. As soon as kings become degraded, spending money for sense gratification, they are lost. Similarly, at the present moment, monarchy having been lost, the people have created democracy, which is also failing. Now, by the laws of nature, the time is coming when dictatorship will put the citizens into more and more difficulty. If the king or dictator individually or the members of the government collectively cannot maintain the state or kingdom according to the rules of Manu Samhita, certainly their government will not endure. Om Gyana Tamadandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitamena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagadamayam Dadanti Svabhidantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Guru Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakopa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the verses again. O best of the crews, I have already described in the third canto the activities of Kapila, the son of Devahuti. Now I shall describe the activities of Yajnapati, the son of Akuti. So Swayambhuva Manu, the husband of Satarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. So here we have a great example of a king who is a saint, and he's given his teaching by example, so he's an acharya. So what does he do? A great, powerful king who has the ability to enjoy so much opulence and sense gratification, he just gives it up. And he goes into the forest and stands on one leg with his wife for, what is it, 100 years, 1,000 years? 100 years. So the principle is there of austerity. It's not that in this day and age we can follow the same kind of austerities that Swayambhuva Manu and his wife performed. But the principle of austerity is there for us. So the Bhagavatam is illuminating this principle that there must always be some kind of austerity. Otherwise, we cannot advance. Austerity is there for purification, for advancement. So this is the process of becoming purified. And Swayambhuva Manu is a very intelligent person, so he knows the purpose of life and the result of sense gratification. So Prabhupada quotes in the purport, the Bhagavad Gita 4.2, evam parampara praptam imam ridarsho vidu sa kalena mahata yoga nasta parantapa. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science appears to be lost. So Prabhupada explains in that purport that this science is actually meant for saintly kings. It's not meant for demons. Because what happens with demons, they'll take this science and then they'll interpret it according to their own whims or their own personal desires, and then they'll change things. So this is what happens after time. It gets broken. And then the science, the actual science, appears to be lost. So then it must be revived again. And then because whatever great personalities do, then the common men will follow. Yad yad acharyati shrestas, tat tad evataro janaha. Sayat paramanam kurute, lokas tad anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So there's so many natural leaders in society. We have our teachers. We have our parents. We have our leaders of society, kings, presidents like that. So they have a great responsibility, actually, to their dependents. And that is that they must learn this transcendental science that's been handed down through disciplic succession. So not only do they have to learn it, but they must follow it also. They must actually practice what they preach. And this is what Swayambhuva Manu is actually doing. He's a Manu. And this knowledge is in the Manu Samhita. So he's following an example of what it says, that we should practice austerities. It's not like you can be tell someone you can't do this, you can't smoke, but yet you smoke. There's no effect there. So that's why we have to actually become advanced. We see the example of King Vaina. He was a king, powerful king. And the selfless, broad-minded brahmanas, they were trying to guide him, as they always do to society. They're always trying to guide society because they're selfless. They're concerned because these are like their children. It's not like a child can dictate and know what's good for him or what his future is like. And this is what the demons are like. They're like grown-up kids trying to like pout and, you know, make their own ways of enjoyment and sense gratification. Just like today, our society, there's the government, but yet they say the government isn't they say it's the problem actually. So they should get the government out of the way. So they lottery, they bribe the government to get these grown up kids, demons, to have their way, to actually take advantage of the citizens, to exploit the citizens. So King Vena is like a typical example of a king who was just whimsical and didn't respect the brahmanas. So what happened is that they actually killed him with their high-sounding transcendental mantras, and because he didn't adhere to their ruling. So they were looking for the welfare of the citizens, so they had to eliminate him. It's described in a purport there. Srila Prabhupada says that long life, obedience, good reputation, righteousness, prospects of being promoted to higher planets, and blessings of great personalities are all vanquished simply by disobedience to a great soul. This is what happened to King Vena. Because he was disobedient to the great sages, then he lost his long life, he's lost his obedience, all his reputation, everything he's lost. But the sages, they were very concerned about the citizens, so they actually prayed. And that's when King Prithu came. And he helped all the citizens by, you know, producing all kinds of crops, and, you know, even helped his son, which was a demon, helped him advance. So this is the duty of a well-wisher, a leader, a father. They're like that. So we have just the opposite, another great king. And today his appearance day, Bhishmashtami, is Bhishmadev. He's a great personality, a great acharya. He's actually one of the great Mahajans, the leaders that we should follow in his footsteps. And he also explained that we should be obedient and that we should abide by the orders of the Lord without argument. And he was very much a devotee of Krishna. In fact, in the Rajasuya sacrifice, he was glorifying Krishna so much about all his wonderful deeds and what he did and amazing miracles and feats that he performed even as a child. He was glorifying Krishna to no end. But yet the demon king, Sishupal, started to blaspheme even Lord Bhishma and Krishna. But he blasphemed Bhishma because he was glorifying Krishna. And he started saying, Bhishma, you're just a fool. You're actually a blind person trying to lead blind people. How do you know? Krishna, this coward boy, anybody could lift a heel. He was saying, besides, he's just a coward boy. And you think you're learned, but you're actually very ignorant for these things. So he said, and you think you're so great, practice these austerities of celibacy your whole life. That's just because you're impotent. You know, so he was insulting Lord Bhishmadev because he was envious of Krishna. And everybody at the Rajasuya sacrifice became so upset, especially Bhima. He was, you know, about ready to just pounce on him. But Sishupal was so puffed up, he wasn't even afraid. He thought, come on, you know. And he said, you know, you're just like a fly. You're going to enter the fire. Come and fight with me. But he was going to, but Bhishma stopped him and he said, don't worry. Don't even listen to him. And he told Sishupal, just stop your ranting. There's no end to arguments because words can be followed by more words. It's just no end. Don't worry. Krishna will actually just see to him. And this is what he said here. This is what Bhishma told Sishupal, who was a Chedi king. He was the king of Chedi. He says, cease your rantings. There will never be an end to arguments, for words may always be answered with words. Here is Govinda. Let anyone who opposes him stand now before him in battle. Thus you will attain liberation, your soul entering his transcendental body. So this shows you that Bhishma knew Krishna and he knew what was going to happen in the situation. We can see even Bhishma, he gives us so many examples. And one example also is that vice can never conquer virtue, no matter who you are. Even if you're Bhishma Dev, the great grandsire, the great personality, he happened to be on the wrong side. Of course, it was Krishna's arrangement, just to glorify him. And because he was on the wrong side, he had to die. Just to show that no matter who you are, a great personality like Bhishma, if you're on the side of vice, you will never be victorious. In the same way that a society or a government that doesn't follow the scriptures, then they will be ruined, as Prabhupada predicted in this purport. So it's very important that we actually become obedient. Otherwise, we'll lose all our great things that we'll be able to accomplish in Krishna consciousness. So it's not that the monarchy was autocratic. So we can see they were actually... excuse me. They weren't autocratic, just thinking that they were... didn't have to take advice from anybody like King Vena or other kings, or taking wrong advice from demons, you know, being bribed. So they were actually very saintly, and they understood and they listened and they took advice from these brahmanas. The brahmanas weren't paid by the kings. It's not like they were their employees and they had a boss telling them what to do. No, they were great saintly personalities, and they didn't receive anything from the king. And Prabhupada talks how this was just recently, how Chanika was a great brahmana counsel to the king, Chandragupta. And he didn't take anything from the king. That way they can actually have, you know, give advice without being bribed or anything like that. But today, we're in a society where we think we're free, but it's actually so-called freedom. We're being manipulated as we're being forced to become consumers, forced to get jobs and be productive in industry. And then you're always being watched, like Big Brother is watching you, right? Like the book, George Orwell's 1984. I'm sure many of you read that book. It's how they manipulate the people. You know, there's an unknown enemy, so we have to take, you know, we have to take control. So this is what they're trying to do. These unscrupulous people, they're just trying to manipulate the people. And they create an unnatural society. They're very misdirected. And it's wrong. It's just completely wrong. So as Krishna consciousness movement is there, and Srila Prabhupada always talks about, you know, how there should be Krishna conscious government, how they should follow principles. What is the austerity that we follow? Simple, chant 16 rounds and follow four principles. It's very simple. So not that we could stand on one leg for, you know, thousands of years. But we actually follow a very simple process. It's not that we don't have comfort. I mean, Srila Prabhupada said, I'm very satisfied in Mayapur in this hut, but many of you will not come here if there's no running water and, you know, nice facilities like that. So even Prabhupada created this new Dwarka. It's a community of devotees where, you know, you can have nice food, you can have a nice situation where you're staying, a nice ashrams, you can dress nicely, you know, very colorful clothes, very nice clothes. You know, it's in style. You know, it's like that. So, but yet, sometimes we think, oh, maybe we're different from society. We're like, we don't really fit in. We're misfits. Like Tomal Krishna Maharaj, you know, was going to the university wearing his dhoti, and then he came to give a talk at an assembly there. And they introduced him as some kind of time warp. It's like a time warp. He doesn't belong here. You know, that's how they try to make you feel that, you know, this is weird. They try to push you in a corner as being different. But we have to stay positive. We have to stay obedient in our conviction. And that way we can actually make advantage. There's many devotees, even Gurukulis. I heard about a Gurukul who graduated Mayapur, and then he went to school, became a businessman. And then he started telling people about principles and different things like that. And then they were very interested and they were attracted. And so he finally became a leader, like a positive leader and a counselor for the company. Like that. So this is what we need to do, infiltrate society in such a way that we can have a great impact. So that's why we have this need for austerity and purification. It's so that we can develop this transcendental consciousness. And that's how Srimad Bhagavatam is like a light for us. It's very relevant. We get light, we get knowledge from this transcendental literatures. You know, there may be some austerity even in Krishna consciousness. We may say, oh, we're giving up. So, you know, that's what Prabhupada said. What do we have to do to become a devotee or become a saintly person? What do we have to give up? And Prabhupada said, you have to give up suffering. That's all you give up. Because as the great king here, Swayambhu Vimana, is realizing, he gave up sense gratification. Because he can see it just causes suffering. Those are two things in this world is that we have enjoyment and suffering. But the enjoyment that we have, sense gratification, actually leads to suffering eventually. So that's what it does. Sense gratification inevitably causes suffering. But if we practice these principles of austerity, you know, we actually become free from the modes. Chant Hare Krishna, you get incredible power. You're actually associating with Krishna. But some may think, you know, I gave up this suffering of the mature world. Now I'm a devotee and I'm still suffering. Yeah, devotees suffer. But it's not like the karmis or the materialists are suffering. Because the devotees, yes, in the beginning you may go through some suffering. But after some time, you actually rise above it. You actually become free from it. Just as great saintly kings can do. You know, they say spiritual life may be difficult. Yes, it is. But material life, it's actually impossible. It's actually an illusion. So we just stick to our principles. We stick to our austerity. You know, the austerity, we may think, oh, we have to wear these clothes. You know, some people say, why do we have to wear these outlandish clothes? Indian dress, and looks like even men are wearing a dress, you know, Indian food, this different music, you know, ragas, different ragas like that. So that's actually, we think, it's what is this Indian culture? It's actually not Indian culture. It's Vedic culture. It's actually the culture of the spiritual world. It descends from the spiritual sky. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to relate to our original culture. There's a nice book that was written by Drudha Karma and who's the other devotee that wrote it? Mukunda Maharaj. Yeah, Mukunda Maharaj. They wrote this nice book called Divine Nature. And they talk about the topics of the day, the environment and meat eating and things like that. But there's an underlying theme all throughout the book of an alternative way of life, as Vrindavan, as a model of an ideal world, a very simple way of life, how they respected the cow, how you'd walk in the villages in India and you look into someone's home and there peeks out of the door a cow. You know, they live with the cow. The cow is considered to be the representative of all the demigods. Actually, they say the demigods reside in the cow. Everything about the cow is auspicious. So we have this secret model which we can apply to any situation. We measure the value of anything in its relationship with Krishna. So that's what you could do. You put the spiritual world next to the situation that you're living in, and then you try to get a little closer to it. You get closer to the model of the spiritual world. That's what we're trying to do, is model the spiritual world. They actually wear these clothes in the spiritual world. They have artiks like this. You know, Krishna is there, the deity is there. There's wonderful festivals. There's amazing foodstuffs, beautiful music. It's not that Vrindavan is just like a village, oh, I have to become a farmer now. No, there's culture, there's science, there's music, there's so many beautiful things that we can do. All this is there. So there's this verse that backs us up that we put everything, this is our secret motto, how we actually judge everything by. Rite ritam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyad atmano mayam yata baso yata tamaha. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, it has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So this is what we do. We judge everything. We put it against the spiritual world, against the model of Vrindavan, and we see, we compare. And if it doesn't compare to that, then what is it? It's just a reflection. It doesn't have any value at all. How can you see the sun with a light, with a flame, or with a powerful flashlight? You can't see the sun. The sun only reveals itself. So in the same way, Krishna reveals himself through these transcendental literatures as a light, through this culture, through this way of living. So this is what we have. We have a mad life, this global economy, so-called global economy. It's just a mad way of life. But we should have a more natural, simple life of living. We can create a community, even in a city. Community is great. You know, you have association. We're always reminding each other of Krishna. There's great respect, great festivals, great honor, like that. So we just practice a little austerity in this age. And what can we attain? We could attain the spiritual world. So from a little austerity to the spiritual world. And it's not just farming. There's art, there's refined culture, there's festivals. There's actually real relationships there. So that's our Vrindavan. It's a model in every respect. So I'll read the verse again, and if you have any comments or questions. Sambhuva Manu, the husband of Satyarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. Yes, Suradas. Sir's question is that if he was a pure devotee, can he go to the spiritual world in a polo shirt and polo shorts? Oh, Bermuda shorts. That's a funny question because it's interesting how we identify ourselves with a particular brand that's so-called, it's made by some company. Was it made in China, probably? Made in China. But actually, these are all illusory identifications. I mean, if one is preaching as a pure devotee and it just so happens that he's wearing his particular clothes, you know, for preaching purposes, it's not like his lifestyle or how he lives, but if he's actually chanting Hare Krishna and preaching, distributing books in that attire, he can go back to Godhead if he dies. No. There's a dress code in the spiritual world, I think. There's no Bermuda shorts or polo shirts. But yeah, I mean, these clothes are actually spiritual. Aren't they living entities in the spiritual world? Everything is conscious. Yeah. And these never go out of style. That's the thing, that this model, it stands up against everything, even time. It's timeless. All these other things are just fads. They come and go. You know, they don't last. So yes, there's a question over here. Oh.
He didn't switch sides. He remained loyal. He'd rather fight than switch. But still, we glorify him.
Yeah, Krishna wanted to use him as an example. If you're on the side of vice, you still cannot win. And it was because of Krishna's arrangement that they did not say anything. Actually, Krishna somehow or another made that situation happen. It was Krishna's arrangement that they didn't speak up. And it was just to give false hope to also Duryodhana, that he thought that they were more, that they would fight on his side, and he was feeling more, that he knew that they were, you know, his men because they didn't speak up. Dronacharya didn't speak up either. You know, the king himself, you know, the blind king. What's his name? Dhritarashtra, yeah. He didn't speak up. After a while, he stopped it, but, you know, it took him a while. But that's what I was reading that Prabhupada said. I mean, it's said in the book. Prabhupada says that he was used as an example by Krishna, but he was a pure devotee. And we know at the end, that's why he had to die, though, because he did not stop it. You know, Draupadi from being disrobed. He didn't try to say anything. So that's why he had to die. Even though he had the benediction of such a great personality to die at will, you know, he is laying on the bed of arrows until he decided to leave his body. And then Krishna, because these great things, these great kings like Yudhisthira, they weren't like power hungry or just wanted to get the kingdom for themselves. And he actually was so disturbed by this battle that so many people were killed just on his behalf, that he didn't really want to take the kingdom. Even Krishna couldn't convince him. Even Vyasadeva couldn't convince him. So then they brought him to Bhishmadeva. Krishna brought him there so that Bhishmadeva can enlighten him and instruct him to take up the kingdom and rule and how to understand. And that's where Bhishma said that we just have to become obedient without argument to Krishna's order. So then that's when Yudhisthira decided, and he went with full enthusiasm and led the kingdom because of Bhishmadeva's instructions, perfect instructions. Yeah, so that's, yeah, it's very complicated, but yeah, Krishna has a plan which we cannot understand, but we found out what the result was. Any other comments over here? Questions? Jai, thank you for your kind attention. All glories to the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Manus are like leaders of mankind. And they gave instructions on how man should actually live. They give the laws. They actually gave laus, it's called the Manu Samhita, on how one should live, how human beings should live. And there's all kinds of rules on what you should do. There's rules on inheritance, rules about women, rules on how to punish people. Like in the Manu Samhita, it says that a murderer should be killed by the king or the leaders, because if it's not, it's actually mercy to kill him in this life, because if you don't, in his next life, he has to suffer more and more. It's very incredible. Not only does he have to be killed,
yeah,
get a minimal payment now, but if you don't, in future, you get really, you know, intense suffering. That's cool.
Yeah. I was gonna draw some just kind of like him walking away. I try to reference, and then this is because you know how what is Bhaktisiddhanta's guru's name?
Oh, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
Yeah.
His guru.
Yeah.
Is Krishnadas Babaji. Yes.
Yeah, he was living in the woods too.
Yeah.
His drop of beads are actually just string of